5. Yud Bei Sivan, Tuesday the 21st of May, Rabbi Nathaniel Lieberman, trumpets.
Contrary to expectations, this is not a shiur about music, but the topic of Chatzoitrus has always interested me, and I had a look through the parasha, and there are a few limudim I think we can take from it. There's a short parasha here between Revi and Chamishi, 10 psukim. It talks about making the chatzotzers what they were used for, when they were used, etc. Very basically, if they blew a single tekiah with both chatzotzers, that was a siman that was assigned to assemble the whole eid or the whole community to the oil moed. If they blew just the single one, just the single trumpet, then that was a siman that just the nesiim, just the princes, just the heads of each eved should gather to Moshe Rabbeinu. And if they blew tekiah through tekiah, that was a sign they should start traveling. Furthermore, they also blew on special occasions, on sad occasions, when there were tzoras, when there were mechomas, difficulties, and again on the days of simcha, on Yom Tov, on Rosh Chodesh, and even every day. The Rishonim speak about morning and evening. They blew every day in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, I saw an interesting kasha. The Reb Yitzhak Zilberstein brings in his Sefer Tuvcha Yabiu from the Ralbag. He asks a question: why is it necessary to use the Chatzotzeres to assemble the Nesiim? Sach HaKoil, in total, there were 12 Nesiim. Surely one can send messengers around, knock on a few doors, and assemble the Nesiim. Why was it necessary to get out the trumpets and to trumpet it? Why was it necessary to make such a big deal of it? Why couldn't you just go from house to house? And he brings from the Ralbag a fascinating answer. Could so easily send a text or an email. Yeah, there's so many ways he could have done it. So why was it necessary to use the trumpets? The Teretz might not work about text, but the Ralbag's Teretz. And he answers as follows. He says, people have been zoicha to make a simcha, they've been zoicha to make a chasna, for example. So they know how much is involved, all the different facets, how one has to get an excellent photographer, how one has to sort out the caterer, how one has to sort out the band, one thing after another. And when you think you've got everything sorted, possibly the biggest headache is the invitations. Because we're not talking about the design, how the invitations are made, we're talking about who to send an invitation to. Because if chas v'sholom we leave somebody out, or if chas v'sholom we send the wrong type of invitation, there can be ramifications for generations. People can get braggers, people can get upset, and it can effectively ruin a simcha when it should be a happy occasion because one made mistakes with invitations. Says the Ralbag, if one went round to each shevet, to each nosi, and knocked on the door to invite him to come to Moshe Rabbeinu, imagine the following scenario. We go to the house, to the tent of Nossi, of the first shevet. He's not at home. So you leave a message with a wife, with a child. You then go on to the next one, the third one, the fourth one. And Nossi number one is not yet aware that he's been called. He goes for a walk, and in the street he meets Nossi of third shevet, the fourth shevet. And they say to him, oh, you weren't invited to meet Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Ralbag, because of the possibility, obviously we've got to bring this down to our level, we're talking about the Nesiim or the Shvatim, we're not talking about regular people, but he says the Ralbag, because of the possibility of kina and sinna, of jealousy and hatred, which can eventually bring to machloikas, therefore it was important that it should be a chatzotzeres, and at one moment everybody should be invited, rather than individual invitations. So an email or text which well, you can't be sure everybody would receive it. They might not be watching their emails at that moment. So Chatzotzos would still be better. Chatzotzos could, everybody could be invited at the same moment, and that would avoid machlokes. But interestingly enough, this necessity for Chatzotzos would not apply to Sheva God. Because Sheva God, we find in Parshas Psedra, Bamidbar, Perik Aleph, that their Nossi was Eliosof ben De'uel. In Perik Beis, when it speaks about the Degolim, we find their Nossi has suddenly changed his name to Eliosof ben Re'uel, with a Reish rather than a Dalet. Ramban says, don't make a fuss about it, says Ramban, we find many names in the Torah, people were referred to by a few names. In fact, we all know that Yisro was referred to by seven names. One shot is because it's connected to his seven daughters, and each time he made a chasna, he had to, for various reasons, he had to change his name. But that's not the Ramban's shot. The Ramban says that it's not important, the fact that he's known by different names. However, there's a fascinating chidor. The chidor says that Shevet God could have had a major taina here, a major complaint, because who were the heads of the Degolim? There was Reuven, who was the Bechor of Leah. There was Don, who was the Bechor of Bilah. There was Ephraim, representing Yosef, the Bechor of Rochel. So surely God should have come along and said, listen, I'm the Bechor of Zilpah, I deserve to be the head of a Degol. Discrimination. He could have made a fuss and could have caused machlokes, but he didn't make a fuss and he kept quiet and didn't say anything about it. Therefore, says the Chidor, that because of that, he quotes from a Sefer, I must admit I've forgotten which Sefer he quotes it from, he says, because of that, Sheva God was zeicha to two things. Firstly, they were zeicha that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried on their chelik, on Eva Leyade, Moshe Rabbeinu was buried there. And secondly, they became known as the friends of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Re'u'el is Re'akel, the friend of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not only De'u'el, not only did they know HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they were that bit closer, they became friends with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, because of this middah of not making a fuss when they could have, and not screaming discrimination when they could have. So, the Chidor goes on to say, just imagine if they would have made a fuss. What would they have gained? They would have been the head of a Degel. Because they didn't make a fuss, they got the Nitzchias that Moshe Rabbeinu is buried on their Chelek, and they're known as a friend of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So for Sheva God, it wouldn't have been necessary to have these Chatzotzos just to call the Nesiim. And furthermore, I saw an interesting story. Concerning about 200 years ago, there was a Rav in Vienna called Reb Yitzchok, called Reb Shlomo, and he had a son called Yitzchok. And this Yitzchok was a Muslim in all Mavonim. He was the Shadchan's ideal candidate. He was a Masmid, he had a Balmides, he had everything going for him, and it was anticipated that he would get the best Shiduchim for the future, everything would work out wonderful for him. The Shadchanim were knocking at the doors, but the Rav Rebbetzin kept saying, listen, let him learn a bit longer. One day this Bocha was very involved in learning in a sugi, had a major machlokes with his friends, and he decided to go out, fresh air, to think through the sugya, work it through. And this was in Vienna, and he went out to a park down the road, and he was walking backwards and forwards, working through it, and just by looking at him, you could see that this was a special young man. And there was somebody looking who he wasn't aware of, because on this park, there was a high stone wall on one side of the park, and on the other side was the king's palace. And looking through a window from upstairs in the palace was none other than the princess. The princess sees this young man, and she sees an aura of spirituality here. He's not the regular, frivolous young man who she's used to socializing with. He is something special. And she decides she wants him. And she gets one of her servants to follow him. And the servant comes back and tells her that the young man you're interested, he's Yitzchok, the son of the Rav here in Vienna. So she goes to her father, the king, and she says to him, Daddy, you know you've tried to find me a husband, you brought fine young men from all over the world, and you're, quite frankly, you're despairing that I will make a decision. I've found somebody I want to get married to. So the father's happy. Who would you like to get married to? Says Yitzchak, the son of the Jewish rabbi here. Says her father's face clouds over, and he starts screaming at her. He says, "Is that why I brought you up for? You could have the best marriage in the world, and you're interested in some Jewish boy over my dead body." Absolutely refused. But she was a princess, spoilt rotten from birth, and she went upstairs to her room, shut the door, shut the curtains, lay down in bed. She's on strike. She's not eating, she's not communicating, she's not doing anything. And her health deteriorated. Her father called in the best doctors, and it was quite easy to make a diagnosis. They came to the father and they said, "The only way she'll get better is if you give in to her and you let her marry who she wants." And the father was agonizing over this. He just can't do it. Yes, no, yes, no. While this was going on, one of his ministers became aware of the situation. The minister was a friend of the Rav, and late at night, he sent a messenger to the Rav, alerting him of the situation. The Rav read the message that his son is in danger, the princess wants to marry him, so he called together the Zayin Tuvei Eir, the city elders, to discuss what to do. They thought of bribing, thought of running away, all sorts of eiters, but nothing seemed to work, until one of them said, "I've got an idea. Why doesn't Yitzchak get married? If he gets married, finish, that's the end. The princess will leave him alone." The idea was so brilliant in its simplicity. But now a problem arose. Whereas beforehand there'd been tens of shadchanim knocking on the doors and lots of girls available, suddenly when they needed them, there was nobody available. Some had got married to other people in between, some disappeared, had gone to live somewhere else. There was nobody actually available on site at the moment. Until the Rebbetzin says, "Hey, what about Rivka?" Rivka? Nobody thought of Rivka. Rivka was the maidservant. Rivka had absolutely nothing going for her. She was not bright at all. She was not good looking at all. She had no parents. She had no lineage. She had no money. She had absolutely nothing. She was a dumpy servant girl who couldn't find anything else. Nobody else was interested in her. The Rav took her into the house. She had one miler. She was single. So they had almost a minion in the house. Single. She was a psula. So they brought another few men into the house. They now had a minion. They were Masada Kedushin. Yitzchak is married. They thought that Yitzchak would have the chasna of the century. There's one going on today, apparently, in Yerushalayim. They thought it would have a huge chasna with thousands of people. And yet, he got married with a piece of cake and a l'chaim in the father's front room in front of 10 people. But it was the correct way to do things, because a couple of hours later, there's this knock on the door, messengers from the king. The king would like the Rav to appear before him. The Rav dresses, Shabbos Dikah Begodim, Choyd Malchus, he goes to the king, and the king says to him, "My daughter, there's something wrong with her, but my daughter insists on marrying your son Yitzchak. He should appear in the palace tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock to start learning about Christianity in advance of the proposed marriage." So the Rav says to the king, My son Yitzchak is married." "Oh, he's married, then there's nothing to talk about." The Rav's dismissed. Fine, the danger's over. A couple of weeks later, when everything had died down, the Rebbetzin says to Rivka, says, "Well done, Rivka, you served your purpose. We can now sort of, you know, dissolve this marriage of convenience that we arranged." And Rivka looks at the Rebbetzin and says, "Well, she doesn't know what the Rebbetzin wants. She's happily married. What's the problem?" So the Rebbetzin has to speak directly and tell her quite straightforwardly and quite forcefully that Yitzchak isn't really supposed to marry you. It was only to stop him having to go to the king, and therefore we want you to accept a get. And she said, "I'm very happy. You know, she's happy as she is. Why should she?" So another crisis. She calls the Rav. She calls Yitzchak, and Yitzchak says, "I'm happy to stay married." I should embarrass somebody else. I'm not going to make a fuss here. This is how it's worked out for me. I'm extremely happy. Everything should continue as before. In that moment, there was a rush in Shemayim. What reward are we going to give Yitzchak for this exemplary show of Midas? And it was decided that his reward will be his wife will have 12 births, 12 multiple births. She had 12 sets of twins. That was the bracha. And from this 12 sets of twins, well, the family Tu'umim has its origins. Tu'umim as in twins, many Choshu Rabbonim, the Rav of Yerushalayim, over the years, Mishpachas Tu'umim, from this single Maisa of somebody who wasn't prepared to shout and scream discrimination, this is not for me, this is not correct, this is not how it should have been. And that, says the Ravag, is the limit here of the Chatzaitzris. Unfortunately, not all of us are up to this Madrega to behave in such a way, and therefore it was necessary to have the Chatzaitzris to call all the Nassim together at the same time, that there shouldn't be any problems. Later on in the Parsha, we find that in Pasuk Tes it says, V'chisavayim l'choma ba'artzachem. If you have a melchoma la tzara tzair eschem, you have a melchoma, then you also blow the chatzaitzris. Here, the Chofetz Chaim, on the words, a tzara tzair eschem, brings a moshel. And he says as follows. He says, there were once two countries who were at loggerheads, who were at war with each other for many years. For convenience sake, we'll call them Iraq and Iran. They were just fighting this war for many years. And eventually, even they realized that it was senseless. Just to go on fighting for so many years, there was such a loss of life, a loss of resources. What was the point in it? One month, one country would be, Misgaber would defeat the other one. The next month, it was the other way around. They just weren't getting anywhere. So they got together, and they decided, we can't go on forever. We're going to make a time limit. This war, says the Chofetz Chaim, this war is going to go on for 4 more days. Whoever's the winner at the end of the 4th day, he is the undisputed winner of the whole long battle. So these 4 days are now crucial. The first of the 4 days, Iraq overpowered Iran. The second day, Iran was stronger than Iraq. Third day, again, Iraq is stronger than Iran. And on the eve of the 4th day, the Iraqi people got together and they said, listen, there's a danger, Iran will be stronger than us tomorrow. We've got to use some chokhmah here, we've got to do something different, because otherwise this will just go on and on forever, and this is the crucial day tomorrow. And they came up with the following idea. Their spies, their scouts had worked out where Iran stored its weaponry. So instead of just focusing on fighting during the day, they're going to do this great idea of a sneak attack on the weaponry of Iran at night, and the next day Iran will be without weapons and or will suffer major loss to their weaponry, and therefore Iraq will be able to win. And Kachava, that's indeed what happened. Some commandos went out that night and attacked the weaponry and managed to destroy or to cart away many of the weapons belonging to Iran. Next day, the two get ready to fight again. Iraq's there with all its weaponry. Iran doesn't have any resources, and they give up. They surrender. Iraq are the winners. Says the Chofetz Chaim, that is the Tsar HaTzair Eschem, Ki Savoyim Mechoma Ba'artzechem. There's an ongoing, an ongoing battle with the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is after us. The Yetzirah does not give in, a very determined enemy who keeps on at us day in, day out. Sometimes he wins, unfortunately. Sometimes with our Torah, with our mitzvahs, with Mas and Tevim, we win. One day Ahin, one day Aher. The Yetzirah thinks, what can I do in order to finish off this enemy completely? The answer is, says the Yetzirah, I've got to attack his weaponry. What is the weaponry of Klal Yisrael? The weaponry of every Yid is his Torah, is his Ruchnius. So the Yetzirah tries to take away his Torah learning altogether in order so that the person can't fight back against the Yetzirah. So as the Chofetz Chaim, therefore a person has to be extremely careful to guard his Ruchnius, his Torah in his life, in order to be able to continue the fight against the Yetzirah. Because it's either one way or the other. With the Torah one is Matzliah, without the Ruchnius one can fall into the depth. And this idea of the Chofetz Chaim is also found in the Seder we learned on Shabbos. There, just after Revi, is the parsha of Saito. And Rashi says, Ma kosuv lemalo min ha'inyan, what is mentioned in the pasuk just before the parsha of Saito, there it talks about giving truma to the kohen. What's the connection of giving truma to the kohen and a Saito? Says Rashi from the Gemara, that im ato ma'akev, Gemara at the end of Brachas, im ato ma'akev matnais ha'kohen, if a person doesn't give matnais to the kohen, chayecho by your life, you'll have to come to the kohen to bring the wife who is a seita in order to be checked and to face the possibility of a misa mishuma, of a terrible death. So the question is, okay, it's midah kenegan midah. You didn't give to the kohen, you'll have to go to the kohen. But surely it's disproportionate. Truma, one can give a mashu, one can give a small amount for truma. So because because this person didn't give a small amount of his produce to the kohen, therefore he's going to suffer, that his home life is going to be in turmoil, everything's going to be turned upside down. And also, he didn't give the truma, why is his wife guilty? What's going on here? Now, the Teretz is that the Koyanim, Shevet Levi, Yoru Mishpatecho Liyakov, the Pasuk says in Vezoyis HaBrocha, and the Rambam explains at the end of, famous Rambam, the end of Hilchot Shmita Yovel, that the Bnei Levi, the Koyanim, they are the ones who teach Torah to Klal Yisrael. They are the Ruchnius of Klal Yisrael. They don't have their own land, but instead of having their own land, Klal Yisrael give them trumas and masas. Klal Yisrael provide them with food. They in turn provide us with the ruchnius. So you have two farmers. You have one who does all the avoida, all the work in his field, all the hard work in his field. And when it comes after he has all his produce, and he thinks to himself, I've got this sleeping partner, the kohen, should I give some away to him? Of course I should give some away to him, because I can look at it two ways. If I ignore the kohen, so all I'm involved is my gashmias from beginning to end with absolutely no ruchniyistika input. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is the kohen, he's the one who doesn't have his own land, because he's the one who goes around Klal Yisrael, Yerum Mishvatecho Liyakov, he's the one who, whenever I need some Torah, whenever I need to have a shayla, whenever I need to be taught something, it's the kohenim are going to teach it to me. They are the input of ruchnius into what I'm doing, into my parnosa. So if such a person is prepared to give to the kohen, then he shows that what he's doing is done with ruchnius, it's done with Torah. In such a case, he'll be matzliach. But if chas v'sholem, somebody cuts the ruchnius out of his life, and he doesn't want to give to the kohen, then it doesn't mean he is the same person minus ruchnius. It means that he falls right to the depth. And what happens is, when he falls, his whole home life disintegrates, everything falls apart, there's no chinuch in the house, there's no shalom bayis in the house, the wife becomes a seita, and everything disintegrates. And in case you think that's some sort of pshetl, it's actually mefurish in the psukim. The pasuk tells us, in Parshas Bechukesai, the Pasuk tells us, in Bechukesai Telechu, follow the Torah, Shati Yamelema Torah, says Rashi, V'nasati Gishmechem Be'itom, you get all the brachas. Later on it says, V'im Bechukesai Timosu, it says. The opposite is, V'im Bechukesai Timosu, I can't find the Pasuk, but it's Pasuk Tet, I think it is. No, can't find it. Yeah, the pasuk says ve'im b'chukaisai. Yeah, I found it. Tesvav ve'im b'chukaisai timosu. That's the opposite. Then, unfortunately, comes the whole teichocha. Question is, why the two extremes? Why not the middle? It says Rav Sharia Deblitsky, there is no middle way. There's either in b'chukaisai telechu, or there's the opposite. Unfortunately, in b'chukaisai timosu, and in between those two, it also says in Pasuk, V'nasati mishkoni b'seichachem. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking about if you follow the Torah, and b'chukos ha'telechem, nasati mishkoni b'seichem, v'lo yisigal nafshi eschem, and my soul won't be sick of you. V'salachti b'seichem v'yisilochem le'lekim. Rashi explains, v'salachti b'seichem atayil imochem b'gan Eden. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I will go together with you in Gan Eden. And in case you say that loy tiru mimenu, that we'll be such good friends that there won't be any Yirah Shemaim, don't worry. Vayisi lachem lelekim, I'll still be your Evishta, I'll still be your God. But it's interesting. The Pasuk is telling us the wonderful things that will happen if you follow the Torah. And we're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will stroll with us in Gan Eden, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't be sick of us. It's like going up to a friend and saying, you're my best friend, you don't make me sick. I mean, what does the Pasuk mean here? The Pasuk is telling us it's a metzias, it's a fact. One either goes together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with the Ruchnias, Atayli Moi Began Eden, or the opposite is that Tigal Nafshi Eschem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sick of the person. We've seen, unfortunately, when they came into the land of Israel, they came in and some people said, now that we have the land, we don't need to keep the Torah. Kashem Yordan, when they go down, Yordan Adlamata, they became equivalent to some of the worst, those people who didn't follow the Torah, left the mitzvahs, came equivalent to some of the worst nations in the world. Because either one is up there or one is down there, there's no middle way. And we find the same thing by Rus and Orpo. Rus and Orpo were two sisters, two princesses. They were both wanted to go together with their mother-in-law, and the mother-in-law says to them, it's not worth your while to come with me. I'm a poor lady, I've got nothing left anymore, I can't help you anymore. So Orpo, Loshen Oireth, she turned the back of her neck, she turned away. Rus carried on and stayed with Naomi. Says the Medrash Rabbah that the same day that Orpa left Naomi, she was involved with 100 Aroyas, and even with the Medrash Rabbah quotes Rebbe Tanchuma, who says even with a Keller she was involved. How come you had two sisters, both the same background, both had the same desire, they both originally wanted to follow Naomi, and yet one turned one way, one turned the other way? Rus was zeicher to have David HaMelech, future generations. The generations of Orpah included Goliath, the Rosh Goliath. How come that she, in one moment, went down so deep, so far? But the answer is, it's either in the Chukosai Telechu or in the Chukosai Timosu. And that says the Alshech HaKadosh, coming back to the Chatzotras. In the last Pasuk of the Parsha of Chatzotras, it says, Pasuk Yud, I will find it. Yeah, Perik Yud, Pasuk Yud. Of Yom Simchaschem uv'mayadechem, of Roshi Chodshechem, uzgatem b'chatzotzeres, on your happy days if you blow chatzotzeres, says the Alshech, in your happy moments, if you're very happy, you use your chatzotzeres to express your happiness. If it is, alo liseichem v'alzivchei shalmeichem, if the simcha is to do with the oilis and the shlomim, the korbanos you bring to Hashem, is to do with your ruchnias, then v'hoyu lachem lezikorin lifnei alekeichem, you'll be a zikorin in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does it help us if we are a zikorin, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers us? We say it in Tehillim, we say it in Halal, Hashem zechoronu, yivorech es beis Yisrael. If there's zikorin in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then there's yivorech es beis Yisrael, klal Yisrael azeicha to a bracha. And the Alshech goes on to say, if chas v'sholem, we use our simcha, we use our chatzitzas for the wrong purposes, then you get the opposite. Because either one is with ruchnias and one goes up, or one is without the ruchnias, chas v'sholem, and one goes down. May we be zeicha mitz Hashem to the day when Binyan Beis HaMikdash, once again we'll have the Karbonis, once again we'll have the Chatzetzeres, and Bias Mashiach Sekeinu B'mheir Yomeinu. Thank you.